This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron Corn Herbicide from Syngenta, an upgrade for growers who don't settle for average. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Oh, man. Tallies in the weekly export sales report this morning stunk. Corn, beans, and wheat. None of them were good. Growing an active week of corn and soybean harvest in the Midwest and spring wheat in Canada? And yeah, we've got some pressure on the grain markets this morning.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us again this morning. Welcome to AgriTalk. Okay, listen. Yesterday morning when I opened the show, I made some assumptions about these explosive devices that have been mailed to prominent members of the Democrat Party that I shouldn't have. Steve down in the Houston area was listening, and he asked me a pretty simple question. He said, what do you know that the FBI and investigators don't know in making those assumptions? And you know what I've got to say to Steve? That's a good question. I obviously don't know nearly enough to make assumptions like I did yesterday. I was connecting dots that maybe shouldn't be connected. So for now, I'm going to reserve judgment until there is enough information for judgment to be made. Okay, on to today's show. We are going to visit with Tom Slate from the U.S. Grains Council in the next segment about what's happening at the Export Exchange. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with John Kaupert. John is the executive director of something that I've got to admit, I don't know a lot about. The National Corn to Ethanol Research Center is celebrating its 15th anniversary, and we'll hear from John what they've accomplished, what they hope to accomplish in the next 15 years. And get this, back on October 10th, AgriTalk listener Ron tipped us off to a company called RoofMax, that has developed an alternative use of soybean oil. At the end of the show, we're going to talk with the CEO and co-founder of RoofMax, Mike Fiesel. I'm looking forward to that. Anybody that's out there finding new ways for us to use the products that you guys are producing out there, hey, I am all for it. Give us a call, 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us, hashtag AgriTalk, in the message. That way I'll be sure to see it. Right now, let's turn it over to Clinton Griffiths, get an update on the news. What's going on, Clinton?
Oh, not much. Here you're on Panda Watch 2018.
Yes. Well, yes, I am.
Well, an update, Grandpa-to-be.
Yeah, Grandpa-to-be. We are one day past due day.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I'll ask you again tomorrow.
Right. Hopefully the answer will not be 2 days past due day.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. For you and the mom, right?
Yes.
Daughter, Emily.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
All right.
We're pretty excited here in the Flory house, no doubt about it.
You can just hear the heart palpitations from here.
Yep, that's right.
Everyone's excited. Hey, I spent the day at National FFA yesterday.
Yeah.
Good group of kids.
Sure.
Just saying.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying. You know, every time I go back and see what youngsters are doing, you always step away a little bit encouraged about the future of the country. And you know what? There's some good kids out there doing good stuff, working hard, and it's great to see.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to recharge your battery some, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, yeah. You know, I mean, you go and I judged the contest yesterday, mm-hmm. You know, pitching in a little bit, giving back, and the kids up there presenting just did a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
As good as any, grown up a meeting I've ever been in, these kids nailed it. It was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. It's hard to judge something like that, isn't it?
Oh my gosh. I know. I know. Well, and that's just it. It's not easy because everybody's so good.
Yeah.
And of course,
exactly.
It's national finals. It's supposed to be good, but yeah, they're just killing it out there. So it was a fun day. It was a fun
Very
day
cool.
to get back, see a little blue and gold, spend the day, reminiscing and asking myself, why didn't I do more of this?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't try hard enough, apparently. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a good deal. So let's talk a little news. Brazil, overtaking the U.S. as the top ag import supplier to China. The imports of food and ag products from Brazil totaling $3.6 billion during September last month, about 30% of the total. Now, imports from the U.S., $625 million, a 5% share. Brazil is also the top meat import supplier, supplying 28% of meat imports, U.S. supplying just 2%, Chip.
Yeah, that meat, that hurts a little bit. That hurts a lot.
I know.
Because China has been on the development list for the guys at U.S. Meat Export Federation for so long, and we were making such good progress, and now we're dealing with the trade issues, and it's, we need to get back on track there for grains and for meats.
Yep. Export's so important to the value of those cutouts. So President Trump taking to Twitter to defend his position on tariffs, tweeting, quote, billions of dollars are and will be coming into the United States coffers because of tariffs. Great also for negotiations. If a country won't give us a fair trade deal, we will institute tariffs on them. Used or not, jobs and businesses will be created and the U.S. respected again, unquote, Chip.
Yeah, will be respected again. That has become his new mantra, hasn't it?
It has.
He's out there and he is he's not asking for respect. He's demanding it. And it you can question his tactics. You can question how he's trying to get it done. But I am not going to question his motivation.
Well, fair comment there. And finally, this comes on the heels of an announcement the U.S. will not be sending a high-ranking official to a major investment fair in China next month. The first-ever China International Import Expo scheduled for next month, taking place in Shanghai. A U.S. Embassy spokesperson saying, quote, China needs to make the necessary reforms to end those unfair trade practices harming the world economy. The U.S. raised tariffs on about $250 billion in Chinese goods, as we know, and responding with its own tariff hikes about $110 billion on American imports. So, you know what? We're not coming. We'll take our ball and stay home.
We're not even going to bring our ball.
That's right.
We're just going to stay here. All right, Clinton. Thanks, buddy.
All right, bud. Talk to you later.
You bet, man. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Greg, it's that time of the year. We should be expecting some strength in the beef prices, shouldn't we, as we get closer to the holiday seasons?
Yeah, absolutely, Chip. We should expect it, and we're getting it. And as a matter of fact, looking at beef ribs, and I know you do the beef rib for Christmas like we do at the Henderson household. Beef ribs are going to cost you 14% more this year. And that maybe runs a little counterintuitive to what the cattle market has been lately. We've traded at 111 for 6 weeks in a row, and packers are making money. But, hey, prices are headed higher this week. They're already at 112. There's a lot of asking prices out there, 114, 115 this week. That's because feeders know packers need cattle. And last week they bought cattle for 2 to 4 weeks out, meaning they're already buying for the holidays. So,
right.
And that futures market's been pretty strong on the beef side, especially for those spring markets. So there's an uptick, upward trend in the beef prices at the moment. Yeah. That's kind of different go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I hate to say this, but it's my attitude towards that 14% increase in rib prices out there. So I'm still going to buy it.
You're still going to buy it, and demand is showing that American consumers are buying it. We've got low unemployment, know, the economy's booming, all these things support beef prices higher. A little different than what's going on in the grain market, but hey, you know, we'll take it while we can get it.
Absolutely. Greg, thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk to you next week. That's Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Up next, Tom Slate, president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. I'm joined by Don Porter, herbicide technical product lead for Syngenta. Don, I know one of your flagship corn herbicides is Acuron, but as margins are projected to remain tight in 2019 out there on the farm, what would you say to growers who are trying to decide if Acuron is worth the investment?
Yeah, that's a great question, Chip. And I'll tell you a story from one of our customers. He had a retailer in Kansas with two different customers each with similar soil types and weed challenges. One grower used a lower-priced corn herbicide. And when you add up all the post-cleanup treatments that were required, he had three applications totaling over 100 dollars an acre just in herbicide cost alone. The other grower used Acuron, and he had really nice, clean fields, and he's going to have higher yielding corn in the end and a better return on investment. So after seeing the results for himself, this retailer is a firm believer that Acuron puts more money in his customers' pockets at the end of the season due to its effective, consistent performance and long-lasting residual control of these tough yield-robbing weeds.
Yeah, Don, I tell you, that is so important at this time. I mean, if you put a buck out there in the field, you kind of want a buck 10 in return, don't you?
Yes, and these are tough times with commodity prices, and it's really a situation where, do I really want to invest a little bit more money up front?
Right.
In the case of Acuron herbicide, if you do put that investment in, then we can clearly see some very good returns, a good return on investment. But
absolutely, that is so important. All right, that was Don Porter with Syngenta, sharing an example of how upgrading your corn herbicide can help boost yield potential and profitability.
Preserving the past and embracing the future is the goal and a lifestyle John L. Beatty and his son-in-law Brandon Witt abide by on the farm they own and operate today.
It's the oldest farm in the county, and it's just been lucky.
Experience may have more to do with it than luck. When you see the success of Beatty Farms in Rutherford County, Tennessee, it now grows hogs, row crops, and produce. The farm hasn't given up on grain. It's just looking beyond the bend.
Today, we grow strawberries and run a U-pick operation, and is a very vital part of who we are.
The family credits success to its location and just a short drive to Nashville, Tennessee.
Being in such an urban area, it's not about producing five more bushels of corn per acre.
The family revamping the old and creating the new, with an on-farm retail shop selling products like bacon and produce grown at the farm.
So if you don't change with time and keep up with change, you get left behind.
Taking the farm in a strategic direction, open to creating a future from the unknown.
I think about that every now and then. It would be nothing that I would have even thought about probably in my lifetime.
Count on your local Pioneer team to bring you knowledge and insights. Year after year, Pioneer is committed to the success of every acre on your farm. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
It's go time. So when they say Pioneer is with you from the word go, that's now. It's time to put high-yielding Pioneer brand products to work on your acres. Start off strong with locally proven products that offer a total package of high-yielding genetics, proven agronomic and defensive traits, and advanced seed treatment options for that extra level of protection. For all your in-season corn, sorghum, and soybean needs, call your local Pioneer sales professional today. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end-of-season rewards.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Very important happening going on in the industry right now, and that's the export exchange. Tom Slate is with the U.S. Feed Grains Council. He joins me now. Tom, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing well, Chip. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Tell us about this export exchange.
Well, this is actually the fifth time we've had it. It's a real simple terms. It's our chance to put buyers and sellers together. We've got buyers from all over the world and sellers from all over the United States coming together in one place, extracting business, doing business right now. And, right so far, it's been a pretty vibrant meeting. It's really encouraging to see.
Okay. What I got to ask, what is encouraging about it? I mean, Tom, here we sit in a situation where the U.S. is in some trade battles with countries around the world. Believe me, it's encouraging to me to hear that you're encouraged by what's going on at the export exchange. But what's making it encouraging?
Well, I think that, one thing that's different this year. U.S. prices are very competitive. Let's just face it. They're very competitive prices, and folks around the world that we work with on a daily basis, are tracking the market pretty closely, And, well, yeah, it's encouraging, but it's actually pretty normal for what happens at Export Exchange. When you put these buyers and sellers together, they start to look at, you know, where they're headed for the next year, how procurement's looking. They get information on the marketplace. But this year, again, I think there's been some concerns on what's going on with trade, but we're in a very strong competitive position on feed grains, on corn, on ethanol, on all the, you know, our co-products, DDGs, things like that. So, again, it's sort of a robust meeting, and people are doing business, which is what we want to hear.
Yeah, and like you said, Tom, the U.S. grains are basically on sale to every country out there except for China right now, right?
Yeah, but we even had a delegation here from China just to keep talks going, keep the contacts alive. They're not doing too much business right now, but there's still interest in U.S. products, U.S. DDGs, U.S. corn, but U.S. sorghum even, and we're still talking.
Yeah.
But everybody else is pretty much here in a pretty good mood, good climate.
Okay, so tell me about the Chinese delegation. They still want to do business, but how do they see the relationship between China and the U.S. right now?
Well, they know it's difficult. We know it's difficult. They feel the same way as we do. Let's get talking. Let's hope for better days ahead. But we've had a long period of since 1982, really, since we've been involved with China. Working together with their industries. Seeing where we can have cooperative programs. They're still interested in working with us. They're still interested in U.S. Grains because, again, they know they're competitive, basically more competitive than their alternative sources. So, again, we like to make sure we invited the folks. They came. They know it's times are tough. They're hoping for better times. We're hoping for better times. And, we just keep talking, and hopefully, the two governments will start talking again soon.
Yeah, Tom, I know the U.S. Grains Council has had some trade teams, some foreign trade teams, taking them out on farms around the U.S. Have you been involved in any of those?
Well, sure, yeah, here and there, everywhere, yeah. Yeah, we'd like to see how the reception's going and what they're seeing and what the teams are talking about. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so those have got to be such rewarding. That's got to be time well spent, not only for the U.S. producers, but for the trade team to come and see where the product that they want is being grown. That's got to be a really cool event.
It's always a rewarding, yes. I mean, it's the age-old saying that you like to do business with people you know. Well, we're making sure that they know the people they know. They're familiar with the farmers that are growing the crops. That connection really means a lot to them, both when it happens here in the United States and, as well as when farmers go overseas. They like to see, sort of the production system behind the product. They like to see the transportation system, the grading system, our contracting system, seeing all these things up front. In some cases, we bring buyers in who meet their sellers for the first time in a face-to-face basis. So that's pretty cool when that happens, but again, they also like talking to farmers and understanding some of the pressures they're under and the care that they take to grow their crops.
Yeah, Tom, I have not had a lot of exposure to those trade the trade teams coming in from other countries, but the Asian trade teams in particular are so interested in the detail of what it takes to move that product from the field to the elevator, down the rail, down the river, whatever. They're so interested in the detail of all of it, aren't they?
Yeah. It's seeing the whole chain, how it comes together, and how, again, farmers take care of their crops, the quality, how they handle, even things like pesticides, applications, things like that. They like to understand more about that, how farmers care about water quality, how they care about their own environments, how they take care of their machinery, their employees, all of the above. They love to see their family life. That really gives them a special thrill. It's great. Again, we like to shorten the distance between the farmer and the end user, and the best way to do it is to have these people meet face to face, talk face to face, and understand each other better. that's usually, you know, underpins great trade relationships.
What a great way to say it. Shorten the distance between the grower and the buyer. I think that's a great way of putting it. Now, U.S. Grains Council been working for a long time to develop those markets over in Asia. China's been a big target of it, but when you get into Southeast Asia, there's been a lot of effort spent down there as well. And now we're getting word that there's going to be some trade talks with the Philippines. Tell us, what do you know about that, Tom?
Well, yeah, we've been working with the administration pretty routinely on trade negotiations. Now that the NAFTA one is done and we have the USMCA, and hopefully that goes through the ratification process, we're starting to get some momentum going, which is something we always wanted to see. And, yeah, we've been talking a lot. Southeast Asia has been a very constant source of attention from us. We've been talking to folks throughout the USTR and the administration about free trade agreements in Southeast Asia. We knew Philippines was on the list. And we also know that they were taking a look at countries like Vietnam and maybe way down the road, Indonesia. Philippines seems to be coming to the front of the line, which is fine for us. We see good prospects there. We have some really interesting things going on with the ethanol market in the Philippines. Corn lesser so, but it's still a market for U.S. corn, and as well as DDGs. So we have things to gain in the Philippines, but we also encourage the administration to continue looking at Vietnam and continuing engaging with Indonesia. Southeast Asia is a big growth area for U.S. agriculture.
You bet. Put Malaysia in there as well. It was really encouraging the other day in a export sales report that we had a couple of boats of beans leaving the West Coast that were bound for Vietnam. That's all part of the development and everything that the U.S. Grains Council is all about. What's our best growth potential over there, do you think, right now? I understand that China is still, it's a great market. It's got great growth potential. If we can get beyond the trade difficulties that we're having right now, but what do you think might be a shining market that's going to surprise some people?
Well, we just talked about it really, Chip. I mean, Vietnam is people don't know this. It's the fastest growing feed market in the world, meaning that their feed industry has the fastest rate of growth of anywhere in the world. And we see that as a big, big plus. Southeast Asia in general is a great place for us. Indonesia could be a game changer for us on the ethanol side and the feed side. We had over 60 people from Southeast Asia alone come to our export exchange meeting. And so that just shows you the interest in what's going on here in looking to the U.S. as source of supply and the interest that we have in that region. Again, Vietnam, Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, Malaysia to a lesser extent, the Philippines, put them all together. We've got some really exciting dynamics there. We're also looking strongly at what we call South Asia, frontier markets, places like India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, even Nepal in a very much down the road. But those are areas that have some good prospects for us, too. So, South Asia, Southeast Asia, put them all together, and you got a lot of people and you got a lot of market there.
Boy, Tom, I tell you what, I'm glad that you mentioned India there so that I didn't have to come back to it, because it seems like every time I have a conversation about global trade, I always get emails saying you don't talk enough about India. I'm glad that you brought it up. Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it. We'll talk with you again real soon.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. That's Tom Slight, U.S. Grains Council.
Farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
They say to really know a man, you have to walk a mile in his boots. Well, my Channel Seedsman has logged more miles than I can count in mine. As crops grow, so does his commitment to making sure there's nothing overlooked. And come harvest, we celebrate in the cab. Him working away, making plans for next season. Look, anybody can sell you seed. Only a Channel Seedsman gives you everything you need to make the most of it. Find yours at channel.com/boots.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And ProFarmer editor Brian Grady joins us now. Brian, I led the show with it. Export sales report, it stunk for corn, soybeans, and wheat.
Yeah, you know, on the corn side, only 349,500 metric tons. Second week in a row where we've had wheat export sales higher than corn export sales. And we all know the struggles that the wheat has had gaining export traction. So that just kind of puts it into perspective. We're seeing losses of about 6-7 cents in the corn market right now. Soybeans. We anticipated that the sales would be poor because China's missing and a key demand period, and you know, just 212,700 metric tons for the week, and as a result, we're down about 6-7 cents in most of those contracts as well. And then the wheat, you know, the struggles have been well documented there, and that market's winter wheat markets are trading about 6-8 cents lower.
Yeah, this weekly export sales report has become a weekly reminder that China isn't in there, right?
Exactly, and we need the other countries to step up. And yeah, on the soybean side of things, they did a pretty good job through September. But once we've gotten to October here, that lack of Chinese demand is really showing through on the soybean side.
Still got some strength in the nearby lean hog futures.
Well, we had the limit up performance yesterday, and obviously you like to see follow through when you have limit up performance. It's been modest follow through, but it's still follow through to the upside, strength in the December, February, and April contracts. A little bit of light pressure in some of those far deferred futures. The cattle market, it's kind of just holding there with a mostly lower tone right now, waiting on cash trade to develop.
But not a lot of movement there. Thank you, Brian. That is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now. Talk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Okay, we're going to spend the rest of the show with me learning. A couple of things that I don't know a whole lot about, and I'm looking forward to this, and I'm really looking forward to this one. John Coppert is the executive director of the National Corn to Ethanol Research Center. He joins us now. John, do I have your last name right? Is that Coppert?
You've got it right, Chip. Thank you so much.
You bet, man. Like I said, I'm almost embarrassed to say this, John, but I don't know a lot about the National Corn to Ethanol Research Center. Tell me about it.
Well, I'll tell you what, Chip, in a way, it's not surprising. You're not that familiar with us. We tend to think that we're kind of the best-kept secret out there in the ethanol space. And frankly,
well, good job on that, John.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk in a bit why we work kind of hard on maintaining a lot of confidentiality. But no, the National Corn to Ethanol Research Center, we were formally established out of the 1997 Farm Bill, the research title of the 97 Farm Bill, with some matching funds from the state of Illinois, administered by the Illinois Department of Commerce. Took a few years for a site to be selected. In the fall of 2001, a 4-acre site was selected down here in southern Illinois, right in the middle of a beautiful 300-acre park that happens to be owned by Southern Illinois University Edwardsville. Okay. Took a couple years to build the facility, and we just wrapped up our 15-year anniversary this past week.
Yeah. So what do you do at the National Corn to Ethanol Research Center?
Well, the National Corn to Ethanol Research Center, our mission from day one has been to facilitate the commercialization of new products, new technologies to be utilized in the fuel ethanol space. That was our objective. That was our mission from day one. That's our mission. That's our objective today.
Okay.
Well, how do we do that? We do it in a variety of ways. Number one, contractual research. About 90% of the work that goes on here in our building is contractual research that we're performing for companies in the private sector. Okay. And this is the reason why the Carndeathenor Research Center is the best kept secret. We do 100% of that work under confidentiality and non-disclosure agreements. The clients that we serve, they own everything. We don't talk about it, and they respect that and they appreciate that. But other work that we do here in fulfilling that mission is grant-funded research.
Okay.
Claim to fame of ours a couple years ago was we landed a $10 million Department of Labor training grant where we worked with many sectors of the economy doing bioprocess and instrumentation training. And then the third and final area in which we accomplish this mission is through sponsored projects. Projects that are sponsored by agricultural commodity trade groups, biofuel trade groups, and others, where we're addressing industry-wide issues and concerns.
Yeah. Well, I would assume that the National Corn Growers Association is also providing some funding there as well, isn't it?
Well, we work very, very closely with state associations as well as national corn growers as well. There certainly are common denominators there, and there's common denominators that expand even beyond ethanol, if you will. You know, I was listening to the market segment right before I came on the air and seeing that corn is down 6 cents a bushel again. You know, one of the things that the National Corn Ethanol Research Center is extremely passionate about is that four-letter word, corn.
Yeah.
And we're driven by creating new uses, new opportunities, new homes for new bushels of corn. In the last 2 to 3 years, as a specific example, my goodness, the work that's been going on here in the advanced biochemical space, biomaterials, bioproducts, you know, these areas of research, these new products that are being derived from corn, all create new homes. It's new market demand for new bushels.
Yeah. It's a catchphrase right now. Anything that we can put out there that is bio-based, is renewable, that there's got to be a lot of interest in some of those products that you're some of the products that you're developing.
There is, Chip, there is.
Yeah.
In fact, literally right before we got on the call here, 30 minutes before this, I was on a conference call that included bio in Washington, D.C. The focus of this call was on the USDA Bio Preferred Program and how important the energy title programs are in the Farm Bill. It's why folks like us here are working so hard to see that those energy title programs end up back in the Farm Bill with mandatory funding. Why? That drives the bio-preferred program of the USDA. Huge, huge industry, $50+ billion industry out there, and we have our finger right in the middle of all of it.
Okay. Do you do any research with engines and the automakers?
We don't directly. While we don't do any direct research on the fuel itself or with the end users of that fuel, we touch every step in the commercialization pathway up to the point where it is a fuel. When it is a fuel, it leaves our building.
Gotcha. Okay, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So as I watched the new plants come online, it seemed like the efficiency continued to grow with each new generation of technology in the plant. Can we expect more of that going forward, John?
Oh, Chip, I'm sitting here right now with a smile that only I can see since we're on the radio. Oh, I love that subject matter. It's a whole radio segment in and of itself, and here's why. In the early years of the National Carndeathenor Research Center, any time that you would pick up a trade journal and hear a phrase such as the USDA states that the theoretical yield of ethanol from a bushel of corn is, and then they would give a number, that number was generated right here at the National Corn Death and our Research Center. Chip, it's amazing at the distance that we've come in just the last decade. And I argue, you know, keeping in mind at all times, I have a strong bias as the son of Southern Illinois farmers, that we've just scratched the surface in what we can do, not only in ethanol, but with that outstanding commodity, the kernel of corn. It really seems like it's unlimited. And you know, Chip, a follow-up to that would be this.
Yeah.
We have seen over the last 18 to 20 months a renewed interest in investment in new products, new technologies in the corn-to-ethanol space that, frankly, we hadn't seen in a few years leading up to that. So there's a lot of excitement right now.
Yeah. You know, back when we were going through the food versus fuel debate, John, and I shouldn't say we, when mainstream media was into it, CNBC made contact with me and wanted me to come on and talk about ethanol. And we did the pre-interview, and I said, you know, I love ethanol because it might be the most efficient use of a bushel of corn that we've got, because we've got the energy coming out of it, and then we've got the feed component coming out of it. Well, of course, I didn't make it on CNBC because it didn't fit their rhetoric.
Right.
But what are you discovering about the efficiency of that kernel that just surprises you every day?
Couple things. One being 12 years ago when I was named the executive director of this center, theoretical yields of ethanol from a bushel of corn would be in the 2.6 range.
Yep.
We saw it go to the 2.7 range, to the 2.8 range. It's not that far of a stretch to hit 3 gallons a bushel plus. And all at the same time that you're doing that, you're producing a very high percentage of the industry is producing a very valuable corn oil that's being extracted off the back end. You know, this corn oil can go into industrial uses such as biodiesel, or it can find its way back into the feed industry. Very, very good product, particularly in poultry and swine diets. And then the distiller's grains is as well. I think that far too often, and going back to the food versus fuel thing, there was this landscape that was painted that, you know, X percent of the bushels of corn were just disappearing. Well, it's the absolute farthest thing from the truth. Out of that kernel, the ethanol industry, we only use a third of it.
Yeah.
We take the remainder of it and we turn it right back over to the feed industry and to other high value uses. But the crazy thing is to this day, you occasionally hear that flare up come about.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely you do. There's no question about it. Not a lot of time here, John, but what do we expect from the National Corn to Ethanol Research Center over the next 15 years?
Well, Chip, again, lots of excitement. And, you know, a couple key things. One thing is this farm bill. Spent yesterday with U.S. Congressman Mike Bost and Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue. We got to get this farm bill through. There's some energy title programs in there. That's not only key to the Corn to Ethanol Research Center, but they're key to those that we serve. So this industry can continue to grow, be vibrant. The renewable fuel standard, my goodness, we need to protect it like we've never protected it before.
Right.
We have those things happen. What's going to happen is the following. As policy evolves, industry will evolve, technology will evolve, and the National Corn to Ethanol Research Center, we will evolve as well, just as we have these last 15 years. And we just look forward to continuing to play the role that we've played, which to date has commercialized over 65 technologies. These technologies are being utilized in every single corn ethanol plant in the United States.
Amazing. Amazing. John, I've learned a lot. Thank you so much. I appreciate it so much.
Well, Chip, thank you for your time. Give us a call anytime.
We will. That's John Kaupert, Executive Director, National Corn to Ethanol Research Center.
It's Digging Deeper with the Mosaic Company, the show where two agronomy experts take your questions about crop nutrition. Here are your hosts, Kurt Woolfolk and Ross Bender, senior agronomists from the Mosaic Company.
Hi, this is Kurt.
And this is Ross. And today we're answering the questions you sent us on social media.
Here's one from a corn grower in Indiana. How can I be sure all my crops are getting the necessary micronutrients from the fertilizer I'm using?
Micronutrients are called micronutrients not because they have a micro impact on yield, but because they're needed in micro quantities. When each plant needs some, but not a lot, uniform distribution of those micronutrients becomes very important.
Through fusion technology, MicroEssentials combines four key nutrients into a single nutritional balanced granule for season-long fertility.
By delivering uniform distribution, MicroEssentials ensures balanced nutrition at the plant level, making it easier for every plant to reach its full potential.
Have any questions you want Kurt and Ross to tackle? Tweet to us at MicroEssentials on Twitter or send us a message on Facebook. And to learn more about smart crop nutrition, visit MicroEssentials.com.
Farmers are busy harvesting across the country, and most are using the data they collect to evaluate the outcome of the products and the inputs that were used on each field this year. Channel Seedsman Adam Piggott from Cleghorn, Iowa, is here to tell us about the Channel Field Checkup Series using field data and the Channel Custom Crop Report. Adam, give us an overview of the Channel Field Checkup Series.
The Field Checkup Series is a series of on-farm visits conducted by a seedsman during crucial stages such as seedling, vegetative, reproductive, and maturity stages. Seedsmen utilize Climate Field View to collect the data so they can include very crucial information and share that with the grower.
So you've got all this data coming in from the field. How do the Channel Seedsmen then turn that around and put it to use for their growers?
Seedsmen are using digital tools such as Climate Field View for the Channel Field Checkup Series to really help us document observations from farmers' fields and to communicate that through digital technology to the grower.
All right, tell me a little bit more about Field View and how the Channel Field Checkup Series works.
First, the farmer needs to share his data through Field View with his channel seedsman. A seedsman will then compile all the data throughout the season and create a custom crop report to send to that grower. That crop report can really be sent at any time. I like to send my custom crop reports after collecting all the data through the season and get that to the guy after the maturity stage of Field Checkup Series.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks, Adam. Next time we'll hear more about how the Channel Custom Crop Report is used to begin planning for next season's crops. Farmers can learn more about the Channel Field Checkup Series at channel.com, and you can find Channel on Twitter and Facebook. Just search Channel Seed.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Gosh, that was an interesting conversation with John from the National Corn to Ethanol Research Center. Best kept secret in the whole industry. Okay, let's keep learning. This is a lot of fun for me. Back on October 10th, it was a farmer forum on AgriTalk, we were talking about soybean oil and some of the alternative uses for soybean oil. And Ron, who I know is a regular listener, tipped us off to an ad that he had heard or seen about a product called RoofMax. Said that it was something that we should look into. Well, we are. We've got Mike Fiesel. Mike is the CEO and co-founder of RoofMax on the line with us. Mike, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you today?
Doing great, Chip. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Just fine. Okay, RoofMax. Here we go. What is it? What does it do?
So real simply, as an asphalt shingle ages, the petrochemical oils dry out, cause the shingles to become brittle, just like a road, the reason we get potholes. And it's teared off, put in the landfill, and put a new roof on. So all we're doing is replacing the all dried out petrochemical oils with an all-natural bio oil, of course, soy methyl ester. It's really that simple. And each treatment, we can extend the life of the roof by 5 years per treatment. And many roofs we can treat two or even three times to double the life of a roof for considerably less than replacement, about 20% the cost of replacement. So we're real excited about it.
I was going to say, what's the economics on it? I would assume that it's a whole lot more economical than ripping off the shingles and replacing with a new roof. And you're saying that it's about 20% the cost?
About 20% the cost. Of course, a new roof, you know, today's roofs only last about 15 to 20 years. I'm sure a lot of your listeners remember the years when shingles did last for 30 years. And I've been in the roofing business for over 30 years. And today's product weighs one third less than just 30 years ago. And it's because there's less asphalt, and more asphalt, the longer a roof will last. So,
right.
So,
So you said this lasts about 5 years in replacing it. And is soybean oil like the best oil, or are you using it because of the environmental considerations? What's the reason for soybean oil?
Well, definitely from an environmental standpoint, the product is 100% green. Its main component is soy methyl ester. We've partnered with the Ohio Soybean Council. That's who's funded a lot of the research and development.
Okay.
And they have partnered, so in turn us, with Battelle Laboratories, who's based out of Columbus, Ohio, which is where we're out of. And Battelle Labs is the largest research and development company in the world.
Yeah.
And then we've also had a lot of research studies done by the Ohio State University. We've gotten them involved. So there's now a lot of science, but we're also getting a lot of kind of real world data back from projects around the country that are, you know, buildings that have been treated with RoofMax on an apartment complex where half the buildings were treated, the other half has not been treated yet or have not been treated yet. Big windstorm comes through, not a shingle lost on our buildings treated. And the other 15 buildings that we'll be treating next year, for example, they're losing shingles. So now we're getting the real-world results back, so that's very exciting as well.
That is exciting to hear, Mike, because I was just going to ask you, how long has the product been out there?
We've been working with it for 3.5 years, a lot of just basically laboratory as well as field testing on a local basis here in Central Ohio. We then launched last year, last August, as a company offering this. We sell dealerships, so it's kind of like a franchise without all the royalty fees and so forth. As a matter of fact, one of our newer dealers is a board member on the Ohio Soybean Council. We went out to spray some of his mother's homes about an hour and a half outside of Columbus, and he decided he wanted to be a dealer. So it's a really easy process. It's not a real labor intensive. We're literally watering the roof with ag equipment. We're using ag equipment to spray.
Really? Really? Okay, so back to the economics of it, Mike. Average roof, ranch-style home, how much are we talking here to revitalize those shingles?
The average home, you're going to be across the country, or $1,850 on average, and it changes from market to market depending on the cost. Of course, it's very expensive to live on the East Coast, Massachusetts, yeah. New York, New Jersey. So it tends to be a higher cost there because just the cost of living. Roof replacement is higher there.
Yeah.
In a more rural market like where I live outside of Columbus, Ohio, in a farming community, and roof replacement isn't near as costly as it is just 20 miles up the road in the city.
Right.
So,
right.
So, but about 20% the cost of replacement in a given market is what we tell people.
Okay, yeah, so it comes down to what the market will bear, really, is what you're talking about, which is a great pricing model.
Yeah, we let the dealers decide what the market needs, what the pricing needs to be. If they get too high, they're not going to sell jobs. And if they get too low, they don't make a profit. So we
let
them figure out the market pricing.
Okay, back on that average ranch-sized home, how much soybean oil are you using?
Average home, we're using 12.5 gallons of RoofMax concentrate.
Okay.
Which would equate to about probably 5 gallons of soy methyl ester.
Okay. 5 gallons.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What are you developing any other products, Mike? What else are you working on?
So our main product early on was just a rejuvenator. It brought the asphalt back to life. And in 80% of the country, black streaking has become a really big issue.
Sure.
And that is kind of part and parcel because of what the manufacturers have done. In the process of putting less asphalt in the shingles, they've filled it full of crushed limestone. It's a very inexpensive filler. It's 8 times less than asphalt. The crushed limestone is what has caused all of this phenomenon. A lot of people call it roof mold. It's just the black streaking. It's algae. So our newer Generation 2 product has a fungicide, an all-natural fungicide, laminine, is part of that cleaning element that removes all the black streaks. So we treat the roof, it restores the asphalt and cleans it over about a year's time. Mother Nature cleans the streaks off.
That's beautiful, Mike. Good luck to you. I want to stay in contact with you, and let's see how this product takes off and how it develops down the road. But, man, thank you so much for making the time for us today.
Absolutely. Chip, one thing I just want to say to the farmers, you know, I've said this many times, And I've been a roofer for over 30 years. And without the support of the American farmers, specifically the Ohio Soybean Council, but I think that's all farmers, we couldn't do it without what you guys are doing. We really appreciate your support.
Awesome, Mike. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll be back in touch with you. That is Mike Fiesel, the CEO and co-founder of RoofMax. Come back this afternoon for ATB, everybody. We're going to be talking with Matt Campbell from FC Stone.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
They say to really know a man, you have to walk a mile in his boots. Well, my channel Seedsman has logged more miles than I can count in mine. As crops grow, so does his commitment to making sure there's nothing overlooked. And come harvest, we celebrate in the cab. Him working away, making plans for next season. Look, anybody can sell you seed. Only a channel Seedsman gives you everything you need to make the most of it. Find yours at channel.com/boots.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about upgrading your weed control with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide.